And now I want to begin moving off into part two, where we pick back up on that Eurasian trade alliance, because I agree with you completely that, and you've been mentioning this for years, that that ultimately is the next, I don't know if we want to call it global monetary system, but that's going to be the cog, the center, the hub of the global monetary system in the 21st century. It's definitely coming. We're kind of forcing it, though, now, inadvertently by our actions. You would think, again, a realist in charge of Western policy, and again, I'm not foolish enough to think that it's just, you know, Merkel and Obama and Cameron that are doing this, but a realist would see the situation in the U.S. and the debt and the fact that we are hostage to that debt and go along with Russia, make partners of Russia and China and the creditor nations. Instead, we are continuing with the adversarial stuff. When you and I talked a couple days ago, we talked about how this was the third attempt to go after Russia and Gazprom. And you said, you know, the first one took place in Cyprus a little over a year ago, or almost exactly a year ago. The second one was the attacks on Russia through Syria and what the U.S. was attempting to do there. And now this is the third one with Ukraine. If I could ask you to kind of elaborate on that again and your thoughts there, and then how that all kind of intertwines in forcing the issue. I mean, we are essentially in the West pushing ahead on this Eurasian, and we're making this happen even faster ahead of their timetable, it would seem.
Yeah, well, that's how it is perceived. If we had not seen, we weren't in charge, but if Cyprus had not been attacked, what might have happened differently? Well, I learned in just the last month or so, 6 weeks, that in Cyprus, Russia was buying a lot of gold. That's where they were redeeming the treasury bonds and using other cash. You know, just think of it as using some of their surplus from oil and gas. They got profit. It's not like they're selling treasury bonds only. They had profit from oil and gas sales. They were converting it in Cyprus for gold. Huh. So if we hadn't had the event in Cyprus, would things have gone farther? So look at it as the United States not so much as advancing the Eurasian trade zone and the gold trade settlement and all that with Russia and China. They're actually in the way. They're blocking the path. And what would have happened if there weren't any war or any disturbances in Syria that continue to this day? Well, the pipeline from Iran might have had more progress, and the contractors in Pakistan for the Iran-Pakistan pipeline, adequately funded by the Chinese but inadequately supplied by contractors who don't want to deal with the freeze and the sanctions. Okay, so if no Syria had taken place on the conflict, the whole Gazprom pipeline system might have been advancing further. So again, the West was in the way. So the West is putting up this, I believe, feeble opposition. And I don't believe Merkel and Cameron and the old Sarkozy gang, I don't think they're in charge. No, I think these are energy companies and guys working in the background with significant bankster narco money. Mm-hmm. Again, $800 billion a year. That's a minimum. We're talking 1,500 tons of heroin per year. That's a lot of money, a lot of influence, and a lot of purchase of political leaders. Okay. Now, Why isn't the United States working with our creditors, the Chinese and Russian? Well, because if they were, the COMEX would have shut down and all these sovereign bonds, including the Southern European, would have stopped trading a long time ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe around the time of the Lehman kill. That was not an accident. That was an execution of Lehman to protect Goldman Sachs. Because who was the biggest beneficiary of the nationalization of AIG. It was Goldman Sachs. They got 100 cents on the dollar for all the derivative garbage.
Yes, and they did.
They asked the rest, what'd they get? 50 cents, 60 cents, 70 cents, depending on how late they were to the table. All right, so the U.S. cannot work with our creditors because we're too busy defrauding them. There are three things that are really important to keep in mind regarding maintaining the anti-gold and pro-paper fiat currency regime system. They must continue to rig the markets. They must continue to steal the allocated gold accounts. And they must continue with the bond fraud, which has a central feature of the QE bond monetization and purchase plan. So just take Russia and China. How do they react to the rigged markets? Well, they open up a Shanghai market. They're opening up a Moscow market soon for selling gold. So they're going to have their own price of gold. How do Russia and China react to allocated gold accounts? Well, Russia may not be a victim of allocated gold accounts because they never entrusted the Swiss or the Londoners to hold their gold.
Right.
Only dumbass nations did that. Who is the victim of allocated gold accounts? Well, there are a lot of individual wealthy people in Germany and Switzerland who had their Swiss accounts, Swiss bullion accounts, raped and pillaged. Again, it's not a new theme, but the big victim of gold allocated accounts being misused, abused, stolen, pilfered, rehypothecated and misused is China, the old wealthy families of China. And they decided not to go public with their complaints, but instead to go out and hire a bunch of agents. And I honestly believe, based on some of the evidence and conversations, without any explicit admissions by my excellent source, The Voice, I believe he is among a large team of 20 to 30 different brokers who are draining London of 1,000 tons of gold per month, and it has never stopped since April of 2012, and we're coming up on two full years of 1,000 tons a month drained out of London, and the principal factor behind that is the abuse and rehypothecation, which means illicit usage, of old wealthy Chinese family gold. And it's not just Chinese, it's old Asian money. It might be some Korean and Japanese money. It might even be some Singapore money. It might be Taiwan money, because remember, Taiwan was formed when the wealthiest elements of China, including the technology ownership, went to the little island of Taiwan and settled in Formosa.
Right.
So there's a lot of abuse out there. Now, how do China and Russia react to the third fraud element of bond fraud with QE and the bond monetization, which is basically Weimar hypermonetary inflation legitimized by a central bank? If you had told me in 1988, 1993 under Greenspan that they were going to have four full years of bond purchase and monetization in unsterilized fashion coming out of the Fed, and you put that at a conference in Washington, D.C. or New York City, you would have had 95% in a hand vote saying, you're out of your stinking mind.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Now it is policy.
Yeah, so, now it's just the way of the world. It's just expected.
It's now part of the new normal, which means the heresy. How do Russia and China react to QE and the bond fraud, but to bring about an alternative to the U.S. dollar in gold trade settlement, which has two important pieces. The actual, I call it the prototype. Okay, this is the other thing that I call it Team Obama, where, you know, Obama's like the spokesman who speaks in the Rose Garden. He's the spokesman without any power.
On his teleprompter.
On his teleprompter, right. And if you looked at the debate for 2012 between Romney, there's a brown-colored earpiece.
Yeah.
Remember, Obama did not face the crowd and did not even turn his right side to Romney?
Right.
He looked like an idiot. But there was a photograph that was done probably by some guy's smartphone in the press corps, but it shows the earpiece. He was being fed information just like the puppet that he is.
Didn't he have like a little bump in the back of his suit coat too? Or
No, that was Bush. That was Bush.
I remember the stuff about Obama. You're right. I'm sorry. Continue. Okay.
All right. So the two important pieces for Russia and China for developing their alternative to the U.S. dollar and trade settlement. I gotta back off a bit here. If you were to ask 100 Americans, what is the role of the dollar in the world? They would say, well, it's the currency in the United States.
Yeah.
I think that 90% of them would say it's the currency for the United States. They're not even aware. I would think 10% are aware. The majority of the United States are not aware that the dollar is the currency of global trade settlement.
10% is being generous, my friend.
Maybe. I don't know, because I talked to a number of people and they say, well, it's the U.S. currency, but it's also used around the world. I say, how do you mean it's used around the world? Well, there are a lot of bank accounts that use it, and a lot of corporations use it when they're involved with trade, bilateral trade and all this. Okay, but my sample is not the broad cross-section of the United States that includes, you know, the type who have their ass hanging out going into Walmart.
Wait a second. Did you see me yesterday? Anyway, sorry.
Okay. Go back on to the two elements here. When Team Obama did their latest, before Cyprus, did their previous desperate move, not based in a whole lot of thought, it was the Iran sanctions. How did the Eastern nations respond? Well, Iran developed what I call the prototype workaround. They developed a prototype for gold trade settlement.
Yes, they did.
It's really not all that complicated. They got Turkey to supply the other party with gold, which was then delivered through, you know, backdoor means to get around the sanctions to Iranian corporations and smaller banks to accept the gold that Turkey provided as intermediary. Just think of India buying Iran gas.
Yeah.
India gives a phone call to Turkey and says, look, we want you to buy $1 billion worth of gold. You got 3 months to do it. Here's the bank account, all this information, and here's where to deliver the gold in Iran. Okay, it's the workaround.
Yes.
So without the sanctions, Russia and China and the Eastern nations that will form the Eurasian Trade Zone would not have had the advantage of having the prototype developed by Iran. And I believe Turkey has made such problems with the United States that look at all the different Turkish political problems. Are they now not another victim of the Operation Gladio type work that we're seeing in Ukraine, that we're seeing in Syria, that we saw in Egypt? This is just, you know, they call it the Brotherhood and other ridiculous names, Al-Qaeda. These are the good Al-Qaeda. Okay, well, gee, I guess the United States has been working with good fascists, good Nazis, good jihadists, good Al-Qaeda. Okay, anybody waking up to the fact that the United States has been a fascist nation for 40 years since Kissinger got his hands on the State Department? That's Iran and the sanctions produced the workaround and the prototype for gold trade settlement. The second big element for the gold trade settlement to be pushed by Russia and China will be the BRICS central bank. Notice that they called it first the BRICS Reconstruction Fund.
Yep.
That name is no longer used. It's now the BRICS Bank. And notice that some of the projects are kind of small, and you might think, well, gee, the budget for the BRICS Bank is 100 times larger than any of these Tanzanian railroad. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
No, they're not going to have an infrastructure to connect railroads as a centerpiece for BRICS central bank projects. It's going to be a telecommunication network around the world with fiber optics, and it's going to be a bunch. It's not going to be one office that can be bombed. It's not going to be one office that can be infiltrated by U.S. bankers and London bankers. It's not
going to say.
Yeah, it's not going to be one office that has all of its walls and phone lines bugged and computers subjected to viruses the expertise of NSA. No, instead, it's going to be a bunch of decentralized offices that serve as the BRICS central bank. Oh, just think of it as franchise system. You know, look at the Western central banks. You've got the Bank of England. You've got the Euro Central Bank in Frankfurt. You've got the Swiss National Bank in Switzerland. You've got the Bank of Japan in Tokyo. You've got all these different central banks that operate as like a syndicate. Syndicate doesn't imply criminal, but these guys are criminal in their syndicate. You're going to see the BRICS central bank form. They are going to be the place that assists in the gold trade settlement using the Iran-type prototype. But the BRICS central bank, Turd, it's going to be the clearinghouse for converting all the toxic U.S. Treasury right. bonds, Japanese government bonds, Euro bonds, U.K. gilts, and whatever other toxic paper that might include mortgage bonds with U.S. dollar denomination. That is where – just think of it as it's going to be 80% at first treasury bonds. So think of it as the clearinghouse for dumping and diversifying out of treasury bonds and into gold.
Thank you for clearing that up, because I was going to redirect back to that, because you've enlightened us all on that before. And anybody listening, there should be a list at the bottom of this podcast page to every single podcast where the jackass has graced us with his presence. And if you go back and, you know, pick off some of those and listen to them, another one of Jim's predictions that is coming true. And at least a year ago, Jim, we talked about this BRICS, development bank, and that's the place where the creditor nations, China, Russia, will deposit, if you will, rather than selling them outright, you know, in Western data where it shows up in the tick reports and all that stuff. They'll deposit in this bank, and it's there that it'll be converted into gold, and that will form the basis of this settlement system. You've been talking about that now for quite some time, and there's no question how can that not be the way it's going to turn out?
Well, it seems like it's like a path of least resistance.
Yeah.
We've got to have a return to the gold standard. I mean, we're just flailing around. I asked my father, for instance, every few months, I said, Dad, have you seen any grand effort toward a solution? Now, he's not trained in economics and business and finance, but it's a nice check, because he reads Newsweek, he watches the news. On Sunday morning, he passes the time by watching some of the interviews on Meet the Press and things like that. And I said, Dad, we're seeing a lot of the patchwork for fixing, for stopping the bleeding, but do you see any effort that you would call a reform movement? He said, not really. I don't really know exactly what you mean, but it doesn't look like there's any big plan for a solution. And as you've been saying, Jim, for 3 years, I didn't really understand a lot when you were talking back in 2008 and 9 and 10, but you said that they're not even going to try for a solution, and I didn't know what you meant, but now I guess bailing out the banks is not a solution. I said, that's exactly it, Dad. I called it the BRICS Reconstruction Bank, and you got it right. They call it the BRICS Development Bank, but it was for the construction projects. And I always laugh when I think of it. The one that they mentioned first was the Tanzanian railroad.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to do railroads. They're going to connect.
Sure.
You know, just so the listeners can get a better perspective of what Africa is all about, the Congo, I don't care what they call it now. It's got some new stupid ass name. I don't care what they call it. It's Congo, okay? It always was the Congo with total chaos. It's still Congo with total chaos. Got a different label on that building that has total chaos inside. Congo is the same size as all of Western Europe.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize it was that big.
It's only one country in Africa.
Yeah.
You've got Angola. Angola is about the size of all of Western Europe. Zimbabwe is not quite as large, but it's maybe two-thirds the size of all of Western Europe. Nigeria is quite large. Combine it with Niger. I don't know why they distinguish Niger from Nigeria. But, you know, they talked about offering a war in Chad to supply the gold to Germany. Chad, Sierra Leone, Ivory Coast, Cameroon, Central African Republic, put them all together, they've got the size of all of Western Europe. I think you get the point.
Yep.
You could put all U.S. and Canada landmass inside Africa and not fill it up. It's an enormous place. But
so, yeah, there's going to be some development there. But that's yeah. a nice way to phrase, oh, no, we're just doing this for this benign thing, you know, and then it's all – then the infrastructure is there. And I would
– Right.
Why don't we
let's go to the threat.
Well, let's go to the threat, and then we can kind of wrap this up and put it all back together.
Okay.
I'll just open it up there. Let's go to the threat. Tell us what you see.
You cannot continue as what's happening in Ukraine without some severe reactions. I love the Newtonian law. An action brings about an equal and opposite reaction. That might not be immediate, but in the geopolitical space, it tends to happen. And what I've noticed in the last 2 years, 3 years, the geopolitical reaction happens faster. Look how fast it took Egypt to have a counter coup.
Yeah.
It was about 18 months. I don't think quite 18 months. The U.S. put Mohamed Morsi in and waved the U.S. flag over Egypt, except the U.S. Fed, with all of its monetization, altered the food prices in Egypt, and that is why they had the revolt. It wasn't about a popular uprising over reforms or jailing of dissidents or anything like that. It was over food prices, which was not properly reported. So my point is that these reactions are happening much faster. I expect by the end of 2014, maybe the later months of 2014, we may see some counter-coup attempts and uprisings against the Kiev fascist Nazis that the U.S. is supporting in Ukraine. Okay, so what is being pushed? Let's suppose the United States pushes Russia much more, alters their ruble exchange rate to the point where they've got maybe some bank failures in Moscow, and you've got some serious problems with price inflation, and the public is being stirred up. Let's just suppose Russia is severely disrupted. What is Russia going to do? What will the Kremlin do? What will Putin do? Well, they've already given away part of what they're going to do. Cut off gas to Eastern Europe and start dumping treasury bonds.
Right.
Okay. If you're in Washington, London, or some other castle that is owned by oil companies and energy companies, and you're making decisions and passing them on with phone calls to the government leaders that you own lock, stock, and barrel and have in your pocket totally, what was your plan for opposing Russians and Chinese sale of treasury bonds? And to begin with, did you not expect China to back Russia? They
right.
backed Russia immediately.
Right.
And there's a secret document that got leaked out of London saying that London will not support sanctions against Russia. Okay, that's going to be in the news a little bit more soon. It's already out there. One of my clients is from London and working in the financial district there, the City of London, and passed that on to me several days ago, and I thought, wow, that's pretty big, and it's certainly not in the CNN news for propaganda. All right, so cutting off gas that would affect Germany, Italy, and France in a big way might severely alter things.
Uh-oh,
Jim. Oil companies actually thought that there would not be a gas cutoff by Gazprom. Amazingly, they thought, no, Russia's got some financial stress, so they're not going to cut off their own income stream. Oh, man, that is have you ever heard of in the chess, you sacrifice a pawn and a knight in order to gain position?
Yeah.
These people are not chess players.
Obama announced yesterday he's going to pump out 5 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and attempt to hurt them by lower crude prices, too. I mean, that always works for, 12 hours?
If that. 12 days, anyway. 12 hours, who knows? Okay, so the immediate threat is dumping treasury bonds. And, you know, I think it's already started. I think the dumping of treasury bonds began a year ago now in Cyprus. I don't think there was any large-scale dumping that was timed with Syria in any way. I think the Chinese are busily converting treasury bonds to fixed assets, hard assets. You know, just think of they're buying a Brazilian offshore energy company like Batista's, or the Chinese are buying a bunch of office buildings in Manhattan, New York, right, or Los Angeles, California. Okay, so dumping treasury bonds, I think, is already in progress. They might accelerate it. And with the selling of treasury bonds, buy Russian rubles to push up the ruble.
Yeah.
Just to screw the London and New York Wall Street types who are messing with their currency.
Right.
Now, but there's something much bigger. Okay, you've got the threat. I got to repeat it. Cutting off gas to Western Europe and dumping treasury bonds. Okay, those are knee-jerk reactions. What I've been told, and this is directly from The Voice, Putin has a plan. It just needs a trigger. The plan, it already is in place. It just needs to be launched. It needs the trigger. Putin has a plan where Russia, through the Kremlin, will demand payment for all oil and gas from European parties, European market, European customers. Russian oil and gas will be required in payment in gold. That's big.
Yeah.
They also might demand payment be in gold or rubles because, you know, rubles. Yeah. Currency of Russia. You want to buy Russian oil, you pay in Russian currency.
Yeah.
Simple as that. And that will just absolutely smash the Wall Street and London currency interventions that are messing with the Russian ruble, which I believe is a form of financial war.
Oh, absolutely.
The U.S. and London regularly engage in financial war in an arrogant position that's unspeakable, in my opinion. Okay, so Russia might demand gold and ruble, which would kick off the gold trade settlement and absolutely destroy the petrodollar.
Yes.
I believe that in a matter of days, the Saudis would say, oh, by the way, we don't just require dollars for payment for oil. No problem. If you want to pay in euros, yen, or British pounds, Swiss francs. Come one, come all, but we prefer just the currencies that are major and that make up the IMF special drawing right basket. That's what I think the Saudis are going to do. But there's a second part. It's the second shoe. The Russians might demand gold and rubles for their oil and gas, but then the Chinese are going to say, we are in complete support of this. We no longer will do anything but the following. We, the Chinese, the largest oil importer in the world, will pay in Chinese yuan currency for all oil and all gas imported into China. That is what we will pay in. If you don't like it, we will not buy from you. Oh my gosh. That's the second shoe. So if you get Russian demand for gold payment, and Chinese demand for yuan usage in payment, you've got the petro yuan trade standard. You got the petro yuan de facto standard. Then you will start seeing country after country selling their treasury bonds.
Yep.
That will cause an avalanche. And here's what I believe is going to be the climax event for all these two-stage threats, the first being gas cutoff and dumping treasury bonds, the second being Russian demand for gold and Chinese demand to use their yuan. The climax is going to be the dumping of the treasury bonds is going to break the U.S. and London interest rate derivative business. And by the way, some of these London bankers are being killed to hide the fact that the London whale losses are over $100 billion. That is one of the motives of the cover-up. Over $100 billion for Bruno Ixel, a.k.a. London whale employee of the J.P. Morgan CIO, Chief Information Office, Chief Investment Office. The CIO has losses over $100 billion, which is what I said it was in the summer of 2012.
Yep.
And now it's starting to come out. So the climax event, Turd, will be that it'll break the interest rate swap derivative and force the U.S. Fed to accelerate its QE and multiply it fivefold, maybe threefold at first, and be forced to launch what I call the U.S.-only split shit dollar. Or if you're in elevated circles where they wear ties and coats, the shice dollar. The new U.S. shice dollar will be introduced when this climax occurs, and I'm told that right out of the gate it's going to be devaluated by about 33%. So think that you can use three of your old dollar, good dollars, you could say good dollar, but call them old dollars, current dollars, to buy two of these. That you're going to suffer on the devaluation, conversion, immediately. It's going to be a 33% devaluation. Now, just take two-thirds and flip it. You get three halves. So a 33% devaluation would result in a 50% price inflation effect to the U.S. economy on an import basis only. So anything made domestically, like soap and razor blades or you know, something at the foundry in Ohio, all that will keep its price structure. But imported crude oil, imported Japanese products, Chinese products, the Japanese and the Chinese are going to follow the Russian-Chinese lead. Okay, obviously the Chinese follow their own lead. But the Chinese are going to follow Russia. And everybody is going to start following the Chinese-Russian lead. So the U.S. is going to see an avalanche in the climax of Treasury bonds, divestiture, diversification, dumping, indirect exchange, which is basically finding a way of using the Treasury bonds and bills as currency, like, say, to buy Batista's offshore oil business in Brazil for $1 billion. If the Chinese buy it for $1 billion, just for argument's sake, $1 billion, it's probably worth a lot more than that, then how are the Chinese going to pay for it? Well, with Treasury bonds. And why would they be accepted? Because the Brazilians have a way of getting rid of them through a London bank.
Right.
London will not be able to say, no, no, Treasury bonds, they're not valid here. They are valid because the United States is a freaking financial colony of England. So that's what I think the immediate gas cutoff Treasury bond dump, followed by the inner workings, the clearly visible workings of gold trade settlement. And they're going to use the Iran prototype developed in the sanctions workaround. That's the sequence.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm glad we drew it out this way because we had an introduction to Ukraine and a lot of the betrayals and who the players are. But this is what I think the climax is going to be, and I don't have a time frame for this. A lot of people are going to write and say, gee, when do you think this is all going to happen? When is the big dumping going to happen for Treasury bonds? And I usually say it's already started. It's just going to accelerate. But I don't know when the climax is going to come. I just know this, Turd. Before 2014 ends, we're going to have a lot more significant events on this path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, this climax can occur this year. I don't think there's any doubt about it, but I think this is probably about the best place to stop. And I can already tell the next time we get together, I want to get into this currency dollar devaluation, split currency into domestic and international facing dollar, or however that's going to work. But I want to just kind of sum up where I guess everything we talked about here, just to kind of put it back into a little nutshell for everybody just to ponder here over the weekend. Again, you mentioned China falling in line. You know, another country that's right in the middle of all this and has not gotten the mainstream press, but they're also supporting it. This is supporting Russia is India. Well, there's no surprise, right? They know the direction everything's going. So
they call it Chindia, right? Remember, you haven't heard the name Chindia much in the last. I heard that back in maybe 8 or 10 years ago a lot, but right. I think we're going to see it more because they're basically going to say we're right behind China.
Right. They're in all of this too. They can see where this is going. And the fact that India supports this or supports Russia and says that, you know, what they're doing is legitimate, it just tells you everything you didn't know about where this is ultimately headed. And where it's ultimately headed is this Ukraine is just another round of Western silliness where they think that, you know, the West still thinks that they make the rules and they are the ones in charge when in fact they're not. And in the end, there will be a gold-based settlement system that'll be implemented and I guess run through this BRICS bank or something similar to it. A key alliance of that new global system is what you call the Eurasian Trade Zone, which is Germany on the west end, if you will, all the way through Russia down to China and into Southeast Asia and even, I'd say, wrapping around into Africa. All of that is where this is headed.
It'll include Japan and Korea.
Those are two
important industrial giants.
And that is where, ultimately, we're headed in this battle, if you will, in Ukraine. And I don't even think that's fair because that assumes that, you know, it could go one way or another. We know which way this is all going to eventually go. But that's kind of where we stand here on as we approach the Ides of March. Is that, I guess, a good summation of what we discussed?
Yeah, it is. I'd like to mention a funny little event that happened only Saturday night. This gives you a different perspective because, you know, there are a lot of other players in the world. I mean, we don't talk about, well, what are the Argentinians going to do? What's Singapore's position going to be?
Right.
How about Australia and New Zealand? What are they going to do? Well, you know, those two are pretty much already commercial colonies of China. What about some of the influential nations in the Middle East? How are they going to tilt? Well, watch Saudi get thrown under the bus. But let me just explain what happened in a conversation. This was amazing to me. Okay, I roamed on Saturday night, you know, went through a certain mall and walked past an apartment building where I used to live a few years ago. And I was very friendly with one of the guards at the building. You know, it's always fun to practice the Spanish talking with one of the guards. And, you know, sometimes I'd have my bicycle with me and he would come to work on a bike. So we became buddies. Pedro, he's a nice guy. You know, we're not talking about a guy with a college education. We're talking about a Nicaraguan immigrant here. With his proper papers, working as a guard, and he said to me, Jim, no, he called me Jaime. Jaime in Spanish is James.
Right.
It's not a popular name, but I go by Jaime. I say, my name's Jim, but call me Jaime. Okay. And he yelled off, Jaime. So I walked over and he said, I'll translate. I don't need to go into the Spanish, but, you know, ¿Qué pasa con Ucrania? Okay, what is going on in Ukraine? And I said, what do you think is going on in Ukraine? You know, I like to flip it around because I don't want to steer his thinking. I want to know, what's your perception? You know, you're a player in this world. I mean, you're not a big buyer of a big American products pushing the economy, but so be it. Pedro, what do you think Ukraine is all about? And he said, it looks to me like the United States thinks that they're the policemen for the whole world. Where do they get off? And I said, wow, that's what you think, huh? I said, what? Don't you go be insulting my country. And he laughed. Oh, Jaime. And he slaps me on the back. And he said, it's not the only place they think they're police. Weren't they police in Syria? What's that all about? And I said, well, it's very complicated. But what do you think is going on in Ukraine? He said, I don't know. They got some people who are pro-American that now are running Ukraine. I mean, I don't know what's going on. So that's when I stepped in. But here you got a Latin American, a poor guy working in Central America, not even living in his home country. He reads the newspaper a little bit. He's a reasonably intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And he thinks the Americans are the police of the world. And I said, it's not only that, Pedro, but they're out there defending the dollar because the dollar is being used everywhere in the world. He said, I know. In my country, people save the dollar. They get out of – if they have savings, they get out of the Cordoba. That's the Nicaraguan currency. He said, right now, if I've got extra colon, that's the Costa Rican currency, I convert it to dollars because the dollar is always more stable. And I said, yeah, well, when it's not stable, you know the world's turned upside down. He said, you think the dollar's going to go away? And I said, yeah, actually, I think the United States is going to make its own dollar. And I said, you watching what's going on in Venezuela? And he said, oh, yes, Chavez is gone, and now the place is going to hell. This is all in Spanish, and sometimes I have to ask him, what was that? What was that again? Because, you know, it's difficult. The Nicaraguans don't use the letter S. Like MAS is more. They say, ¿cuánto más? ¿Cuánto más? Jim. And they would say diez for 10. They would say diez. They don't use the S at the end, the Z at the end. Anyway, it's very difficult sometimes, the Nicaraguan accent. But I'm getting better. I'm not anywhere near fluent. But as we say, me defiendo. I defend myself. So, you know.
Well, if this guy can see what's happening, an immigrant in Central America, that tells you about all you need to know, I would say.
Well, it's a very big piece. My brother used to be a really smart guy. He was a Phi Beta Kappa economics bachelor's degree from a Big Ten school, Big Ten University. But, you know, I just don't think he's keeping up with this stuff. He said, Jim, why do you think Russia, why do you think Putin is one of the good guys now? I said, John, any nation that's trying to oppose the dollar immediately, in my view, is a good guy. Because what Russia is trying to do is bring about a fair trade settlement system that's not dollar-based. He said, you got the Fed. You know what the Fed is doing. They're printing money. He said, yeah, I know. It's not good. I said, well, then why do you think Putin, who opposes it, is bad? People who oppose bad policy are not bad. They're good. But you know, it's very, very weird what's going on. And what we're seeing is death of empire. And Paul Craig Roberts gets a lot of this down really well when it comes to the U.S. and Western European side. But he misses almost everything. It's amazing to me that such a smart guy. And there are a lot of people like Paul Craig Roberts who are brilliant people and who have good connections. But none of them have connections, it seems, to Asia, Russia, and China, because I never hear Roberts or some of the – I don't want to get into a long list of names, but it would be difficult for me to spout them off. But Roberts et al. Never seem to talk about gold trade settlement as being the destination.
Right, right, right.
And that's what the hat trick letter has as an advantage, because I've got the voice, and the voice is a gold trader, and he has a Rolodex – that would blow your doors off. It's billionaire clients, it's central bank clients, and I believe he's involved with the draining of London of 1,000 tons per month. And he told me that it was coming in November of 11. He said in a matter of a few months, it's going to be a lot of drainage of gold and rectifying the situation and changing the balance of power geopolitically from a gold weight standpoint. And I said, you mean a lot of gold is going to move from London to Beijing and change the balance of gravity? And he said, in a monetary sense, exactly, yes. So that's what I offer in the hat trick letter, Turd. It's not just the voice. I've got a guy who's a London banker with extremely excellent, accurate, brilliant information and interpretation of what's going on with Iran, Turkey, and India. India is going to crawl behind the Chinese cape. India cannot say to the West, screw you, we're going to be pro-gold, and we're going to even work toward backing the rupee with gold. They can't do that. So they have to play the game at the Reserve Bank of India. They have to have the obstacles for the gold trade and really mess with their critical jewelry business
sector. Right.
But when the Russians and Chinese come out with the Russians demanding gold and the Chinese demanding to use their yuan, the petro yuan will be born. And you watch how India follows that lead and changes on its economic and financial health.
Exactly.
This is how the whole thing is going to change. The axis is going to start spinning between Germany, Russia, and China. I haven't talked much about Germany. I just mentioned there of two camps, but
I think we'll do that next time. And I think we're going to have to talk again pretty soon, because I think I'm with you. I think things are going to start moving pretty quickly here in the months ahead. But since we can't talk every week, like I said when we began in part one of this. If you're not a subscriber to Jim's service, there couldn't be a more critical time to be a subscriber. So, Jim, tell everybody where they can find you, and tell everybody, you know, about the two letters that you write and your website and where they find you.
Okay, it's goldenjackass.com, no hyphens or periods, www.goldenjackass.com. I guess got a quick story. My mother used to call me Jackass. And many listeners of previous shows have heard this before, but when you get downstairs here to get the dinner, the dinner's on the table, you jackass. And I heard it a lot. When I stole cookies, get your hand out of there, you jackass. I heard it a lot. So I became the Golden Jackass, and my mother laughed so hard when I gave the website the name that she wet herself. In her 80s, she wet herself. And it was really – I said, okay, Mom, I have to leave the room. So – okay, there are two main reports from the Hattrick Letter. Hattrick Letter is the home of the Golden Jackass website, but the Hattrick Letter has two sides. One is the money war report. When Lehman Brothers and AIG and all that happened with Fannie Mae in late 08, I changed the report because I was focusing on the macroeconomic situation, the inevitable crash of the housing mortgage market, the inevitable insolvency of the banking system, the inevitable chronic recession that has continued at about 4 or 5% recession in the U.S. economy. So I changed the report to become the monetary war. I call it the money war report. It's about the monetary war and the defense of the dollar and the defense of the fiat system, because I knew they were not going to go quietly into the night.
Right.
They were not going to say, all right, Lehman's down, Wall Street's insolvent, so we're just going to fold up our tents, go to the back of the gold standard, admit the bankruptcy of all the systems here. No, they're going to try to steal everything you own. They're going to try to continue running the printing press and with fake money buying up all the assets in the world. So that's the money war report, the high-level extreme conflict. And for the March report, I've already got 3 of 6 chapters on Ukraine this month, and it's going to be posted on Sunday, I hope. That's the plan. But the second report, Turd, is on the Hattrick Letter, is the gold and currency report, which has a lot more of the details, like the incredible gold and silver coin demand, the incredible Chinese bullion bar demand through the Hong Kong window, the arbitrage going on between Shanghai and London, the actual movement of gold through refineries and the stress on Swiss refineries, the action going on to steal right now, to steal the Saudis' gold. The Americans and the British need gold.
Yes.
So they're going to steal the Saudis because they're no longer our friends. That's a heavy penalty price to pay for losing friendship with the Americans. And therefore, when the Eurasian trade zone comes to be, no one is going to want to form an alliance with the Americans and British because of what they see in the rape and the pillage of Ukraine and the rape and the pillage of Saudi Arabia, which is in progress. So you got two reports, the Hattrick Letter, Money War Report and the Golden Currency Report. And in addition, goldenjackass.com website has a free page. It's what I call main. The main webpage has a lot of links of public articles and a lot of links of interviews like this. So
well, everybody, that's the launching point is goldenjackass.com. And like I said, we'll try to visit some of these topics again soon. But in the meantime, everybody listening, go check out goldenjackass.com. Jim, gosh, that big, gigantic brain of yours has got to be hurting after all of this. But thank you.
you gotta cut that out. I don't have a big brain. I have a big head.
A big head. Thank you so much.
I've got an oversized head. I always had trouble finding hats that fit. I'd try to buy a hat, and they'd say, I'm sorry, we don't have a size that large. And I said, oh, gee. And then when they started making baseball caps with adjustable sizes,
perfect.
I thought, oh, this is heaven.
Perfect. Jim, thank you so much. I just, for everybody listening, I know that 99% of them agree when I say thank you so much for all of this time. It's just so enlightening, and it just really helps putting everything into perspective. I wish you a good rest of your day, and gosh, stay safe out there, my friend, and hopefully we'll visit again soon.
I hope so. I look forward to it. And just remember that we really only scratched the surface on Ukraine and what's happening. There's a whole lot more going on, and for any one of the stories, you can drill down, as we used to say in marketing research, drill down and find three more stories behind. Like, for instance, in ExxonMobil, they've got rights made with the Ukrainian government for offshore development of oil and gas in the Black Sea. Those contracts, I believe, are null and void. So these are some of the things when you drill down, and I got my opinions on what'll happen with the Exxon rights.
And I bet that you're going to be writing about that. So again,
yep.
Jim, thank you. Have a good rest of your day, and we'll visit again soon, my friend.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks for everything.
All right.